Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is with great pride and eager anticipation that I extend this first welcome to the 2012 festival season, Music at Menlo's 10th anniversary. This season, we explore the power of music from the listener's perspective. How does music affect us? How do we use it? What does it mean to us? Over the course of 8 concert programs surveying music's various powers, from the animation of dance and drama to the deepest nourishment of the soul, this season meditates on the simple and audacious question, what is music for? We've entitled the season Resonance to reflect the deep fundamental exploration of music that we look forward to taking with you this summer. Just as the sound of music depends on the resonance of physical objects, our experience of it as listeners is defined by the emotional resonance it inspires. Music resonates not only in our ears, but in our hearts and minds, and affects us in ways that are impossible to capture in words. It is this strange and marvelous dimension of music that we celebrate this season at Music at Menlo. As in previous seasons, this year's installment of Audio Notes brings you in-depth discussions of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Music at Menlo's Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and a few of this season's festival artists who will take you deep inside the music and prepare you for the rewarding musical experience that our audiences have come to expect over the last 10 years. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
This summer's 7th concert program speaks to music's capacity to incite our most visceral emotions. Robert Schumann's ephemeral Märchenbilder at once expressed the fanciful daydreams, amorous longing, deep pathos, and ecstatic bliss known to all listeners. Antonin Dvorak's F minor piano trio and Gabriel Fauré's G minor piano quartet, each composed at a height of Western music's romantic period, rich towards the same expressive extremes on a grander scale, offering monumental statements on the depth of human feeling.
No chapter in Western music history captures the essence of this summer's impassioned program as deeply as the romantic period. The music composed from the early 19th century through the turn of the 20th exhibits the greatest emotional extremes and the profoundest subjective depth of any era, as illustrated by the 3 composers whose music appears on the program. Robert Schumann and Antonin Dvorak are 2 of the Romantic generation's quintessential voices, and the French composer Gabriel Fauré extended the language of the Romantic period into the early years of the 20th century. Schumann composed the Märchenbilder, or Fairy Tale Pictures, in 1851. It is a set of 4 miniatures, scored for viola and piano, with an arrangement for violin and piano as well, and captures an essential part of the zeitgeist of the Romantic period, namely, its fascination with all things dreamlike and fanciful. The individual movements don't bear any specific titles or programs. Indeed, though Schumann apparently toyed with various titles for the set, like Fairy Tale Stories or Fairy Tale Songs, Fairy Tale Pictures ultimately won out, suggesting perhaps that Schumann considered these pieces more evocative than narrative in character. The first of the Märchenbilder is ruminative, brooding, and evocative. The character changes dramatically in the second movement, marked Lebhaft, or lively. A galloping dotted rhythm lends the movement its vitality. Double-stopped chords in the viola further infuse the music with a sonic fieriness. ¶¶ third movement begins with restless triplet figurations in the viola, accompanied by decisive chords in the piano. In characteristically romantic fashion, the music's expressive character turns on a dime, suddenly entering into a more elegant passage. Though more relaxed, this music is no less heartfelt than what came before. Just as abruptly, Schumann thrusts the listener back into the fervid music that began the movement. Schumann marks the fourth movement slowly with a melancholy expression. This deeply felt conclusion to the Märchenbilder features melodic writing of heart-stopping beauty, one of Schumann's greatest assets as a composer. The Czech composer Antonín Dvořák personifies two important artistic movements of the latter half of the 19th century. His music contains all of the hallmarks of Western European Romanticism, largely through the influence of Johannes Brahms. But Dvořák's mature works moreover incorporate elements of Czech folk music. The widespread popularity of these pieces placed Dvořák at the forefront of the Eastern European nationalist movement, whose proponents also included Bedřich Smetana, Leos Janáček, and a generation later, Béla Bartók. The Opus 65 piano trio in F minor is the third of Dvořák's four existing trios. It was composed in 1883, when Dvořák was at a crossroads in his artistic career. Having built his reputation to this point on the strength of the strong Czech accent of his music, he was now also more broadly incorporating the language of his German Romantic contemporaries. Not insignificantly, it was also around this time that Dvořák became personally acquainted with Brahms, who would become an important mentor figure for Dvořák. As a result, though the Czech element would always be a vital part of Dvořák's musical language, the Opus 65 trio and other works from this period have less of a gleeful Slavonic folk flavor than his earlier work, favoring instead a darker Germanic Sturm und Drang. Indeed, throughout its four movements, the F minor trio is relentlessly expressive and could be heard as a case study of the Romantic aesthetic. It is also a work that bespeaks a newfound artistic maturity in Dvořák's writing. Betraying perhaps an increased familiarity with Brahms' scores, the F minor trio demonstrates remarkable assurance and control on Dvořák's part in the development and organization of his musical ideas. The Allegro Ma Non Troppo begins with a dramatic introduction, begun in expectant octaves by the violin and cello, and then joined by the piano. A crescendo from pianissimo to fortissimo ushers in the forceful first theme. The first theme group is a succession of one exceptional melody after another. Equally impressive is how seamlessly Dvorak brings the listener through such wide-ranging emotional terrain. Listen to how naturally this passage moves from grave despair through a brief, eloquent respite, back again to foreboding and angst. The first theme group closes with a menacing melodic idea, stated by the violin and marked by an ominous half-step. The quietly burbling 16th note piano accompaniment adds to the tension. The second theme group departs from the agita of the first. The cello introduces a lyrical and deeply felt melody. But, although the mood has dramatically changed, this melody is closely related to what came before. The half-step figure that distinguished the close of the first theme group is here recast in an entirely different light. The development section, in characteristically romantic fashion, mines the expressive depth of the exposition's thematic material, beginning with the dark first theme now set in the warm key of B major. But this quickly yields to further disquiet, with the music making a startling harmonic shift from B major to B flat minor. At the end of the development section, the cello puts together a long, eloquent melody, based on fragments of thematic material from the exposition, but slowed down to half tempo. The music arrives at the recapitulation forcefully and with gripping conviction. The scherzo movement evokes Dvorak's Slavic roots, adopting the rhythmic gait of a polka. Wrapped in the garb of this bohemian dance, however, is a vigorously romantic statement. The trio section offsets the driving forward motion of the dance with a dreamlike idyll. This music's serenity is colored by a subtle melodic inflection, the half-step between A-flat and B-double-flat, which appears at the top of the violin melody, among other places. This simple turn gives the melody a bohemian accent, and also recalls the meaningful half-step gestures from the first movement. The slow third movement shows Dvorak at his most inspired. Above solemn chords in the piano, the cello offers a broad and generous melody. The writing is strikingly vocal and, as a result, human in its expressive quality. As a foil to the devastating emotional depth of this opening, Dvorak follows with another violin and cello dialogue that couldn't be more simple. The childlike naivete of this theme is disarming and exquisitely poignant. The temperature slowly rises, and a new tempestuous theme emerges. This is answered by yet another superlative melody, set high in the upper register of the violin. Dvorak marks the music dolce, espressivo. Dvorak reprises the various themes through the remainder of the movement, which ends on a tender note. Like the scherzo, the final movement begins with the elan of a lively folk dance. The cross rhythms call to mind the furiant, a Czech dance form that Dvorak drew from numerous times throughout his compositional career. The folk flavor of the movement is reinforced with the second theme, a tranquil waltz-like tune. But the music quickly reverts to the fiendish energy of the furiant-like theme. The remainder of the movement is given over to working through both themes until, near the end of the finale, Dvorak shows a cunning sleight of hand. The restless energy of the finale culminates in a powerful reminiscence of the first theme of the first movement. This dissolves into a wistful moment of reflection before the trio finally races to its blazing finish. Gabriel Fauré's second piano quartet represents a manifold enigma for chamber music audiences. Contrary to the composer's reputation as a miniaturist of characteristic and characteristically French elegance, the quartet's rhetorical power places it toe-to-toe with the robust piano quartets of the German Romantics, such as the Opus 44 piano quartet of Robert Schumann or the three piano quartets of Brahms. It has inexplicably failed to achieve the same popularity as its elder sibling, the piano quartet in C minor, Opus 15, even though, as Opus 45 devotees will attest, the masterfully wrought second quartet is at least the C minor's equal. French music scholar Robert Orlage has specifically lauded the G minor's, quote, significant advance on the first quartet in the force of its expression and the increased rhythmic drive and complexity of its themes, end quote. The second quartet, moreover, remains enigmatic for how little we know surrounding its creation. Fauré likely composed the work between 1885 and 1886 and played the piano part himself at the premiere on January 22, 1887, at a concert presented in Paris by the Société Nationale de Musique Française. The score bears a dedication to the German pianist and conductor Hans von Bülow. Otherwise, almost nothing is known of the quartet's circumstances. Nevertheless, the work does make evident that Fauré's keyboard prowess matched his compositional imagination. The muscular piano part, realized by the composer at the premiere, requires strength and sensitivity in equal measures. For much of the work, Fauré weights the ensemble unevenly, with the piano single-handedly counterbalancing the trio of strings, rather than taking part as one of four equal voices. This dynamic propels the work immediately from the start of the first movement. Over a turbulent piano accompaniment, violin, viola, and cello in unison introduce the impassioned theme. Much of the movement's subsequent material derives from the physiognomy of this opening melody. A thoughtful utterance by the viola heralds a change in complexion. Fauré fashions a gentler and more tender music, which soon progresses to the ethereal high register of the violin. Following a tranquil recitative in the viola and cello, punctuated by quietly rolled chords in the piano, the violin further transfigures the theme. The viola, assuming further significance in the movement's narrative structure, emerges from this transfiguration, cryptically hemming and hawing. The movement passes into the development section, a harmonically rich mosaic of fragments of earlier material. The arrival at the recapitulation is forceful and abrupt. The quartet's fiendish pianism continues in the scherzo. The left hand's frenetic eighth note accompaniment, accentuated by forceful pizzicato, provides a propulsive backdrop for the mischievously syncopated melody in the right hand. The strings, in unison, introduce their own musical idea, painted in broad strokes and superimposing 3/4 time onto the established 6/8 meter. As the scherzo progresses, the music seems precariously on the verge of eruption at any moment, but Fauré allows no such indulgence. Instead, his sure-handed restraint only stokes further disquiet. The piano introduction to the Adagio extends the scherzo's metric ambiguity. As Fauré divides the movement's 9/8 meter, a time signature typically treated as 9 small beats grouped into 3 big beats, 1-2-3, 2-2-3, 3-2-3, into uneven groups of 2. Fauré apparently designed this passage to evoke church bells that he heard as a child in the village of Cadarac. The viola again assumes a prominent role, answering the piano undulations with fitting simplicity. The dialogue between these two musical ideas, or perhaps not dialogue, but poignant detachment of two estranged monologues, provides the blueprint for the rest of the movement. Aaron Copland said of this slow movement that, quote, "Its beauty is truly classic if we define classicism as intensity on a background of calm," end quote. The finale answers the Adagio with a return to the first movement's furious energy. Movement's energy never relents. Indeed, Fauré saves the coup de grâce for the exuberantly triumphant coda. Audio Notes is authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Wu Han, Patrick Castillo, and Isaac Thompson. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Robert Schumann's Märchen Builder, performed by Paul Coletti and Leslie Howard. Dvorak's F minor piano trio, performed by the Florestan Trio. Fauré's G minor piano quartet, performed by Domus, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.